From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of July, 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk with Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana, about the futures markets. Gary Schnittke, Farm Management Specialist from here on campus, will take up hedging and RP insurance products and how both can be used together today to potentially lock in a profit for the 2012 corn crop, not this one, but the one to be harvested in the fall of 2012. And a bit later in the program, we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast. Steve Hilberg will be here from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, and it all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished higher in the wheat pit. July contract at $6.50 a bushel, up 26 cents. September at $6.51, up 16 and three quarters. And next year's July at $7.57, up 7 3/4. July corn at $22.25 higher, settled at $6.72. September $6.42 a bushel, up 17 and a quarter. December at $6.37. 21.5 cents higher in the March futures at 6.49 1/4 in the corn pit, finished 20 3/4 cents higher on the day. The July contract at 6.62.5, up 18.5, and next year's December at $6.14, up 12 1/4 cents. July soybeans, $13.52 settlement price for a Friday afternoon, up 6.5. August at $13.46 3/4, up 6. September $13.45, 8 cents higher. And November beans at $13.46, up 8 3/4. January $13.56, 8.5 higher. July at $13.62, up 6 1/4. And the November of 2012 at $13.24, up 5 1/4 for the day. July bean meal at $3.46.30, $3.30 higher. July bean oil at $56.20, down 27 cents. Live cattle futures finished the August contract at $114.65, 7.5 cents lower. October at $120.20, down $1.02.5. August feeder cattle at $143.60, 30 cents lower. September down 45 at $144.40. And the lean hog settled the July contract at $95.87.5 a hundredweight, down $1.27.5. August at $96.17.5, down a dime. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look at like at this hour. Crude oil futures August contract, $96.32 a barrel, down $2.35. Ethanol at $2.70.7, down rather up 8 6/10%. Natural gas at $4.21.8, up 8.5 cents. Heating oil or diesel fuel just about 0.7 cents lower, $3.09 4/10. And the gold futures today, $1,541.20 an ounce, $11 higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 12,615, 104 points lower. The dollar at 75.18, up 0.22. And the CRB index down 2.7 at 343.55. The weather forecast for the two-state region says that this afternoon skies will be sunny in the Urbana-Champaign area with a high near 86 degrees, northeast winds at about 8 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly clear, a low of 63, northeast winds at 5 to 7. And Saturday, tomorrow, sunny, a high of 88, east-southeast winds at 3 to 7. Saturday night, partly cloudy, a low of 67 degrees. Sunday, sunny, a high of 91, south winds at 5 to 9, and Sunday night a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Partly cloudy, a low of 74 degrees. By the time we get to the start of the work week, we'll have a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Skies, though, for most of the area, mostly sunny, a high of 91 degrees. Monday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly cloudy, and a low of 73. Tuesday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly sunny, a high of 88, and Tuesday night, partly cloudy, a low of 67 degrees. On Wednesday next week, mostly sunny, a high of 83. Wednesday night, cloudy, a low of 67. And Thursday for the extended forecast, mostly sunny and a high of 85 degrees. More on the agricultural weather forecast and this talk with Steve Hilberg from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the bottom of this half hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana, now joins us by phone to talk about the agricultural futures markets. Been a busy week and a busy day, Mike. Thanks for taking the time with us. Let's start with a kind of a stack of paper that has been piling up on this day, the impact it may or may not have had in Chicago and what really happened, because during the trade today, Informa released its numbers, and they show a pretty good-sized crop, they think, for corn in the United States.
I don't think it had a lot of impact, Todd. I think they were more focused upon the weekly export sales and the Corn Belt weather and the fact that the wheat was underpinning the market, because the Western Australian wheat crop is expected to be quite a bit lower than initially thought. There's a little bit more spotty rains than they had thought earlier in the last 60 days, and the state agriculture department over there said that they were probably overshooting with their earlier estimates. So I think the technically based fund short covering that started off the session yesterday continued into today. Then we got the Corn Belt weather starting to get heated up, continuing to really cause the southern guys to suffer. The export sales for corn in particular coming in under 60 million, just under 60 million bushels. And then that Western Australia wheat crop really charging up. That news really charging up the July Chicago wheat. I think those all kind of countered the Informa numbers and countered the unemployment data.
Sure. So the Informa numbers, we'll drop those out because we've talked about them, suggest that this year's corn crop will yield 162.5. USDA currently at, what, 158.7, I believe. And if that's the case at 162.5, they say that's a 13.759 billion bushel crop, compares to last year's at 12.447. But maybe the more important thing for the day, as you suggested, were some of the outside influences. The export numbers were good. Many say that China has been playing a large role there. What do you think?
I think they have, and I think it goes back to why would they be buying corn from the United States? Yes, the price is cheaper, but why would the price be cheaper when we're looking at them needing to feed their people pork? I think there's a strong tie-in between the high pork price causing their interest rate hike this week. In other words, the pork price jumping above 2008 levels and being at a new high and causing such a big jump in their food inflation directly translated into a higher overall inflation than they want, and that caused them to tap the brakes economically again with this higher interest rate. So they don't want a high corn price over there, but yet they have one, and they would say, well, it's because we are replenishing our state grain reserves, but we have plenty. I just don't buy that. I think that the fact that they're importing right now to try and get their hog production up and replenish grain reserves would suggest that they probably don't have what they said they have. So to boil all this down between the Informa numbers and the fact that the yield for, like you said, yield for Informa 162.5, I really think based upon the crop conditions, very few traders really bought into that, especially this early in the year. But to throw all this all together, I guess my take on it is, let's look at the global numbers in terms of the ending stocks and the stocks-to-use ratios in the July report coming up here next week. Mm-hmm. That will help us with China, help us with Brazil's freeze, help us with Argentina, Australia, so on and so forth. We know there's still a lot that the USDA is going to do in terms of resurveying the Northern Plains and looking at Ohio again. There's a lot domestically that we probably can't count on much in this report. We're going to have to wait till the August report. So I'm going to take a global approach on the July report and then come back and look at the domestic numbers in August.
No, I have a lot of paper in front of me, but I have no idea what the projected ending stocks numbers for the global side might be. Do you have is there a list for that, or is it just the one for the United States?
Yeah, I have only seen the United States one so far. I have not seen any global numbers yet.
All right, so let's go on to the United States numbers, because I know you have those in front of you, of course, next week. On Tuesday morning, right, we'll get another report. That'll be the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. It'll be our first shot of what the new carryout balances for this corn crop and for the old crop and the new crop might be after USDA changed the grain stocks balance sheet. And that should change by, what, roughly 200 million bushels, I suppose.
Right.
And the grain trade seems to think a 905 instead of a 730 is correct for corn. And just under a billion bushels at 994 million for carryout by the time we get to 2012. You think those numbers are close?
Yeah, and I think, again, it goes back to the U.S. numbers versus the global. I want to see what they do with the U.S. And see if we go outside the range of estimates, Todd. But I think I want to see how the U.S. estimates are incorporated into the global numbers and see if total grains and oil seeds in the, around the world actually fall or increase. I think the trade is probably at a situation where they feel like that, given the price decline and the pickup in demand, we've seen prices fall and we're no longer rationing demand nearly as aggressively, nor do we need to nearly as aggressively. Now, that could change if the global ending stocks and stocks-to-use ratios in the world actually fall and we see supply falling once again faster than demand. I think that changes the sentiment, changes the cosmetics of the market, and it really helps in case the outside markets turn negative on us as far as helps underpin us. So I think if you want to keep the funds on board, you want to keep seeing supply falling faster than demand, and if you want to keep the charts on board with us, you want to see the same thing. And so that's where I would be concerned if I saw new crop corn carryover go outside 1.1 billion bushels, because that 1.17 seems to be the highest number I've seen. And if you would see new crop corn or new crop beans go outside the highest range of estimates, I think that's where the U.S. numbers would attract some attention.
Are we missing anything in the process? Because we have some things happening with ethanol in Washington, D.C. There's a compromise on the table.
Yep.
And there will be some credits that go away, 45 cents, more than that, actually, in a couple of different places. Crude oil at $96 a barrel seems to be, I don't know whether I can say this properly or not, underpriced compared to the price of corn. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. I mean, our demand for crude oil, the United States oil demand, and the Federal Reserve pointed this out in a report this week, our demand for oil has fallen back below year-ago levels in a percentage basis year over year. So we are seeing the macro fundamentals continue to worsen, and I think that will eventually catch up to the ethanol side of the equation, especially if gas prices do go back up after the major holidays. But it goes back to, okay, we haven't really hurt the livestock industry permanently because of this price decline. Like you point out, we're back in terms of feeding again pretty heavily, and we've got the ethanol on our side right now. They're making some really good profits. I've seen as high as 22 to 28 cents a gallon that they're clearing right now. So you've got the demand not being rationed any longer because of this price decline. And that's where it goes back to, if the Chinese production or the Brazilian production for corn drops in an equivalent amount of what ours may go up, then we're sitting right where we were before, and the trade may think, well, we don't need to go any lower.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us.
Have a good weekend, sir.
You too. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
If you'd like to hear Mike again, you can do that on our website. The address is willag.org. Now here's Dave with the news.
In agricultural news, ethanol industry leaders said yesterday that a deal struck to overhaul ethanol incentives is not exactly what they want, but it is a workable plan to move the industry forward and replace the ethanol blender's credit with, among other things, incentives for blender pumps. Senators announced yesterday they had reached a bipartisan agreement that would end the ethanol blender's tax credit at the end of this month. In return, the ethanol industry would see an extension and expansion of a tax credit for fuel stations to install pumps to sell higher blends of ethanol. EPA recently approved selling 15% ethanol blends for newer vehicles. The U.S. government said yesterday it will help finance the first commercial-scale cellulosic ethanol plant. U.S. Energy Secretary Stephen Chu says the agency is offering a $105 million loan guarantee to support the construction of the plant by POET. It is expected to produce 25 million gallons of fuel a year. The plant will use waste from corn farms, husks, leaves, and corn cobs instead of the corn itself to produce ethanol. The United Egg Producers and the Humane Society of the U.S. are proposing that Congress write and pass legislation to phase out cramped cages over several years and gradually require what they call enriched cages. Those cages would give hens more space, purchases, and scratching areas that would allow them to express natural behaviors. The proposed legislation would also require companies to indicate on egg cartons how their hens were treated. Under the proposed legislation, egg producers would invest $4 billion over the next 15 years to phase out conventional cages. Farmers on a crop tour say that an Australian government forecast of a near-record 2011-12 wheat crop could be too optimistic because it did not take into account risks that lie ahead before the harvest starts in October. Last month, the Australian Board of Agricultural and Resource Economics said that the country's production could reach 26.2 million tons, just short of the record 26.3 million tons harvested in 2010-2011. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
This is a Farm Doc podcast. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Gary Schnitke, University of Illinois Farm Management Specialist, is here to take up a recent article called Risk Reductions Possible by Hedging 2012 Grain Production in the Summer of 2011.
Yeah, we were looking at the 2012 crop year and looking at if you used hedging now, what sort of profits could you lock in and what sort of minimum revenue could you obtain right now if you hedged production right now.
So there are two risk management tools you need to use.
There's two tools that you need to do. Hedge grain, and we were looking specifically at selling futures contracts. And also you have to plan on purchasing a crop insurance product in February. And we used a RP policy, revenue protection. And that's very important because you do need the revenue guarantee portion, plan on purchasing that for this minimum revenue to result.
Why?
Because RP has a guarantee increase in it, which means its guarantee will increase if the harvest price is above the base price. So if prices rise, its guarantee will rise, and it will make payments in those cases and cover hedging losses.
So if you hedge, you potentially have losses if the price you hedge at is too low and it goes up, and we've got margin cost, and when you get out eventually at harvest time, you may have to pay, and hopefully the crop insurance will be enough to cover those margin cost and hedge costs. Is that right? Or the hedge cost at the end?
The hedge cost at the end. That's exactly right. The guarantee increase will cover those hedging losses.
How does it all work?
All right. So we found the highest minimum revenue, and just to give you a feel, we were using a $6 DEIS 2012 CME futures contract, or that's the price, $6, which is what it's at currently, maybe even a little bit higher right now. So hedge that now. The amount you would have to hedge to result in the highest minimum revenue is up to your yield guarantee. So if you have an 85% coverage level, you'd hedge 85% of the APH yield. Our example uses 180 bushel expected yield and 170 bushel APH yield. Given those things, your expected revenue is about $1,023. And you can get a minimum revenue of $800. So the worst you could do is $800 if you hedged right now 85% of the yield guarantee, or 144 bushels per acre.
Of course, you'd have to lock in a lot of the input prices, right?
That's exactly right. We didn't discuss that here, but you know, if you're locking in the revenue side, you should also work on the cost side. So that would mean locking in fertilizers. Seed's probably less critical, but fertilizers, seed, You'd also be wanting to do something about land costs, making sure land costs are locked in and aren't going to go up on you. So, but that $800, we're looking at probably, $500 of non-land costs next year. And then whatever if you have a cash rent situation, whatever you're paying for cash rent on top of that.
What are the caveats of the minimum revenue?
All right. There's a couple of things. The minimum revenue, we didn't take into consideration any yield damage that might happen, like aflatoxin that would cause price declines that's not covered by the crop insurance product. You also have the situation in which if the harvest price is 2 times the base price, your minimum revenue could go down. So if a base price turns out to be $6, we couldn't have prices above $12. It's very unlikely, but it is something that you have to consider.
Does the RP product, based on the RP product, because you're kind of predicting what the average price in the month of February is going to be too, right?
Yep. Well, that minimum revenue, it doesn't matter what that price is in February. We looked at a variety of different.
Hold on. Why doesn't it matter?
Because for the simple reason that if it's going down, you lock it in and your hedge is above it, so you've already gained on it.
Yeah. Oh, it doesn't matter because if it's below $6, for instance, mm-hmm. and that's where you hedged at, it doesn't matter if it goes down because you're making money on the hedge and mm-hmm. you don't have to worry about the RP product
yep.
at that point. You need to put it in place in case things go up, but...
Yep, exactly right.
Oh, interesting.
So it doesn't matter what that projected price is in February, but if you don't, you have to buy that product or plan on buying that product, because if you don't buy it, you never have a minimum revenue guarantee because you have no yield protection. If you hedged 144 bushels and you get 50 bushel yield, you would have a very low minimum revenue.
Right. So then you could hedge a different amount. So we talked about the minimum, you know,
yep.
the 85% and 144 bushels, but that leaves you.
Yep. Most people wouldn't be thinking about hedging 144 bushels now. And if you don't do that, your minimum revenue won't be as high. But, you know, it still might be a good idea to think about, you know, hedging some of that 2012 production now. I mean, we're looking at $6 prices, and those are reasonably good prices to be locking in future production.
And, of course, this is not an official recommendation.
That's correct. We went for to get that highest minimum revenue, we put it out there for illustrative purposes. You would have to, before you would really think about doing that, you would have to have most of your costs locked in, and that's not the situation. In particular, cash rents haven't been determined yet, and they might be going up this fall. It's likely that they're not coming down. They're likely heading up, so that's another cost that's not locked down yet.
Gary, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Gary Schnitke is a farm management specialist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can read all about his article entitled Risk Reductions Possible by Hedging 2012 Grain Production in the Summer of 2011 on the FarmDoc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I'm Todd Gleason. Turn, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Milk Chocolate with Almonds Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1497, Vasco da Gama left Lisbon with 4 ships to search for a sea route to India. He was the first European to sail there, and he opened the area to Portuguese trade and colonization. In 1810, Gabriel Gustav Valentin was born. This German-Swiss physiologist was the first to discover the digestive activity of pancreatic juice. In 1831, John Pemberton was born. Pemberton was the pharmacist who invented Coca-Cola in 1885. By the way, at first it was a tonic called French Wine Cola. He later modified the formula, taking out the alcohol and adding vegetable essences. Originally, the syrup was meant to cure headaches. In 1881, the ice cream sundae was invented. Edward Berner of Two Rivers, Wisconsin, put chocolate syrup over a dish of ice cream and served it to a patron at his drugstore. Why chocolate syrup? Because flavored soda water was not allowed to be served on the Sabbath. Thus, the new treat, the ice cream sundae, named after the day of the week it was created. And in 1886, it rained snails in Cornwall, England. By the way, July is one of the most prolific months of the year for raining all sorts of living creatures. The top animals likely to fall from the sky? Fish or frogs? And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
This is the closing market report on a Friday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural weather forecast from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, the Prairie Research Institute. Steve Hilberg joins us. Thanks, Steve, for taking the time. So tell me about the weekend, please.
Well, it's going to be pretty typically summer. It's going to be warm, probably increasingly humid. We've got a little bit of a break from dew points today. We've got some very dry air over northern Illinois, southern Wisconsin, and Michigan that's been spilling and pushing into east central Illinois. So that's given us a little bit break on the humidity, but that'll be returning over the weekend. And it's pretty much going to be your typical summer weather here in the Midwest. Not too hot, but humid, maybe later this weekend, pop up scattered showers and thunderstorms.
Things have dried out over the last week and a half just a bit, but subsoil moisture levels are still good?
Subsoil moisture levels are still good. If we look at soil moisture across the Midwest and across Illinois, and for the upper layers, even down to lower layers, the upper layers are not too bad. It's starting to dry out a little bit in northern Illinois where they've had less rain. Basically south of a line roughly from Quincy to Terre Haute, it's been fairly wet. We had some good rain last night in that area and some rain earlier in the month there. So that's pretty wet. As you go further north, it tends to dry a little bit, but still things are in pretty good shape overall.
What are your expectations over the next week?
Really not much change. Continuation of the warm and occasionally humid weather, and a little more active in terms of showers and thunderstorms the first part of next week. We'll have a frontal system that will be hanging around and providing a focal point for that. But then as we get into later next week, we should dry out again. But we'll see temperatures near to maybe a little bit above normal. And, like I said, pretty typical summer weather for around here. Not too bad.
Any farther out problems that you see?
No, it looks like we might turn a little bit cooler later on after the seven-day period. The next week following, we might get a little bit cooler weather. But generally, we're not seeing a whole lot of change coming along.
Hey, thanks so much.
All right, Todd.
That's Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center there at the Prairie Research Institute, located right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. This, of course, is the closing market report. You can hear us anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. We'll gear up now to record our Commodity Week program. We'll have the folks in studio at 4:30 this afternoon. Our guest will be Chad Hart. He's the grains specialist that replaced Bob Wisner over at Iowa State. And we'll have Wayne Nelson in studio. Dan Zwicker will be here, too. It's all part of Commodity Week, our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural commodities. We'll post it to our website, again, at willag.org by about 6 o'clock this evening. You have a great weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.